Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone. And you, we are loaded up today. We'll talk some college football, maybe some Royals baseball. We'll see what mood he's in to talk Royals. Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com and Magazine with us at Mitch Sherman. On Twitter is where you're going to find him. We'll get into Bill Belichick's vocal tone when asked about Tom Brady not being at OTAs. Some Game 4 thoughts with the Warriors and Rockets tonight. You remember him going double-double on Nebraska while at Kansas. I remember him from a KU team that was awesome, that didn't win it. And he had a 14-year NBA career. Drew Gooden going to be with us. Four-year teammate of LeBron James. Went to the finals with LeBron. And we'll get caught up with Drew Gooden to talk some association next hour. It is Big Ten Buffet time with Rick Pizzo in 1 hour in the 5 o'clock hour. So that's the lineup set for you. Can tap the line. Schilling Bridge Court can tap house. We'll let you do that, 466-3776-800-825-5865. You can find us on Twitter, at @2birds1stone, if you want to tweet at and see what Colton's retro Miami Heat t-shirt looks like. It's not retro, it's hypercolor. You can tweet at me, Schmidt_radio, or tweet at Hail Varsity, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt_radio, at 2birds1stone. Can email us, Chris, at HailVarsity.com. Okay, the big topic today, and we may get into some recruiting stuff as well with the macro and micro look of the transfer setup situation of five stars, good 247.com story on that, and just some other graduate transfer looks Nebraska may look at when it comes to center, a name from Alabama to mention for you also here this hour. But we'll start with Bill Moose and his discussion, his sit-down on HSN last night. The big topic was scheduling and Black Friday. That has been corrected. That has been fixed. That has been taken care of by Bill Moose. So you're going to have Black Friday with the Gophers and row the boat for a couple of years, and then it will resume, as Bill Moose put it, till I'm gone, long gone, and off the face of the earth, beyond me. So Nebraska-Iowa will be a reality in 2023 and 2023-infinity. I think that's all right. So a good poll question, is Iowa the team you want as your Black Friday rival? And right now, yes is the answer. Yes is the answer. Makes the most sense. It's really, frankly, the easiest to get to freeze for either fan base on the Black Friday after Thanksgiving. I think that's all good. But when it comes to scheduling, there'll be some more things from a schedule standpoint that will be let out of the bag, so to speak, by Bill Moose in the next week. What's that mean? Does that mean, as he hinted at, some old Big Eight associations? We can get into that. How interested are you in Big Eight / Big 12 schools being on the schedule in future years? I'm okay with it if it's the right Big Eight / Big 12 school. And you've got Oklahoma on there. I'd like to see more Oklahoma. I'd like to see Missouri. I wouldn't mind seeing Kansas State. But as far as Iowa State, and to be honest with you, Kansas, I know Coach Campbell's really good at Iowa State. I don't think Coach Campbell's going to be at Iowa State forever, despite his buyout, despite his contract extension. Someone bigger and better and badder will come calling for him, and he'll eventually leave. The Paul Rhodes loyalty show and tell hopefully taught some. It's nice to want to stay at Ames, but there's a ceiling. And if you got a good staff, they'll get hired away. Look at Coach Herman going from Iowa State to Ohio State, just as an example a few years back. So when it comes to scheduling, let's have this discussion. And it was touched on in Brandon Vogel's Hot Reads. HailVarsity.com is where you read Brandon. And do you want Nebraska to dial back? Would you choose a situation where the Big Ten, first of all, goes to an 8-team conference schedule? That isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're at 9. I was at first kind of like, well, you're doing a little extra work. The SEC and the ACC are at 9 or are at 8. So it's not uniform, and you can't control that across the board. The group of five powers can't control that. The SEC and the ACC are still going to schedule 8. The Pac-12 does 9. The Big Ten does 9. And the Big 12 does whatever they can do. They're round robin. They have a max limit right now because of the number of teams in their conference. It ain't 12. So I look at the scheduling situation as this. If I'm a Nebraska fan right now, I want a marquee opponent that's got some name value. A lot of times when these things are scheduled, it's when a team's hot, when a team's good. Are they good fast-forwarding 5 years? It's really a five-year window. The beginning of a recruiting class to the senior year of a said recruiting class. And you had about a 6-7 year rise and power run for Oregon. Nebraska caught Oregon when they were a far cry from what they used to be. They caught UCLA in some okay years, the early good years of UCLA before they fizzled out in the non-conference. They caught Virginia Tech in some good years, the typical 9-4, 10-4, but quite clearly the non-Michael Vick years of Virginia Tech. So it's a roll of the dice. Nebraska caught Washington when they were really highly ranked. Nebraska beat the hell out of them, and Washington was never the same after those week 3 meetings. So if I'm Nebraska and I'm a Nebraska fan, bring me some quality non-conference as a home and home series. That has been done. That'll continue to be done. You're going to get Tennessee. You're going to get Arizona. You're going to get Oklahoma on the docket. That's good with me. You've had Miami, you've had Virginia Tech, you've had Oregon in the past. So that's fine. The fine line is to not crush yourself in the non-conference. Remember 2015? How'd that work out? When you had BYU and you had Miami, and then you had the schedule you had. You had a lot of good home games in 2015. Didn't win them.
It just wasn't an easy schedule.
Well, no. Yeah. And that's the balance here. And that's what gets back to something that needs to be addressed in the Big Ten. And I don't know how you do it, but you do it. You keep it at 9, and I would just give the Blue Bloods not a pass, but I'd be very selective when I'm asking some teams to travel. Okay, what's Iowa going to be like? Let's just say, for argument's sake, Iowa's in purgatory at 8-5 every year. Let's just say, okay, some years they're going to be below that, but most years they're going to be at that. Iowa has ruined and crashed the party for the Big Ten in 2 of the last 3 years. November game, they host Michigan. Michigan gets upset. Iowa plays great football in the fourth quarter. Last year, they dismantled. They destroy Ohio State. That's a crossover game. That's after Ohio State's already played Penn State. That's after Ohio State's already played Michigan State. That's right before they go get Michigan. Okay? So the Big Ten is at the level to absolutely get a conference champion, no bones about it, into the conference. From the conference championship into the college football playoff, right. Unless it's a 2-loss conference champion at this point. Proved it last year, proved it with Penn State. Okay, so you need to protect some of your big dogs, and you protect them by maybe asking them to, if you're going to play a crossover, okay, have more of the Illinois v. Ohio states. And in Nebraska's case here, look at this year's schedule. Look at the crossover schedule. There needs to be some balance. You can keep the crossover, and as a fan, you're going to love it, but it just doesn't work for you this year because they're road. But this year, you get Michigan State at home. That's your crossover. You get Purdue and Minnesota. Those are your marquee games, and then you get the Buffs. Great. That's your non-conference game. A little nostalgia. Someone can break your windows on your red Toyota like it's 1995 again. I don't like this for a team like Nebraska trying to come up, and even if you've arrived, to have a year where your crossover is Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State, and two of those three are on the road. That's fine. It's going to be a hell of a crossover season. But do that in the year you get Iowa, Wisconsin, and Northwestern at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all or nothing with the scheduling. And this year, it's road games at Michigan. It's road games at Ohio State. It's a road game at Wisconsin. It's a road game at Iowa. It's a road game at Northwestern. All in the same year. That's a heavy workload if you just half it down the middle. Mm-hmm. Pick three of the six there and say you're going on the road. Fine. But give me three of them at home. Because your crossovers change year in, year out. You're going to rotate home and home with the rest of your division. It needs to be split up. The Big 12, they did that. Okay, Nebraska had, in the Big 12 years, they always had on and off. They never had Texas and Oklahoma the same year. You had 2 years of Texas, 2 years of Oklahoma, home and home. It was good. The Texas years, you had A&M. The Oklahoma years, you had Texas Tech. There was a pretty good shot that Tech was going to be, again, 7-5-ish, 8-4, depending on when you got them. They could give you a little bit of heartburn. With A&M, look, they had all the talent in the world, but they were a 7-5 football team. And if you went down there, it was going to be a little bit tough. They could totally get up for you because at the time Nebraska was ranked super high, but they'd turn around and lose the next week to Tech, Baylor, or somebody else. There needs to be some thought with that by the Big Ten to protect their own. And if you're asking Penn State and they've got a loaded team, or you think they're going to have a loaded team, I know it's hard to project, but you know what Urban Meyer's done? You know what James Franklin's done? You know what Harbaugh has done? And Michigan scheduled aggressively in their non-conference. Oh, and Wisconsin's been phenomenal. And Iowa, pound for pound, forgive me, is good enough to beat anybody on a given night at Kinnick. That's Michigan, that's Ohio State, because they've done it. Mm-hmm. So you need to protect your own, because the way things are, you're going to cannibalize each other. And you did it last year, and you did it the year before, and Ohio State still got in as a non-con champion, even though they lost to Penn State. Penn State won the league. Penn State got to watch and play in the Rose Bowl. Ohio State got to go to the college football playoff. You're still going to have that pass as a third choice in a four-team spot at the table right now in the Big Ten. But Wisconsin, it would have been dicey last year, as good as they were. And they could have been, they ended up a 13-1 team.
Right.
But they had to go undefeated to get in. Ohio State does not have to go undefeated. Penn State does not have to go undefeated. But the weight they're carrying with some of these crossovers, mind you, is playing with fire to ask them to remain just a one-loss champion. That's what the Big Ten needs to look at from a schedule standpoint. Don't drop it down. Don't dial it down from 9 to 8. But keep it at 9. But just have a little bit of balance, man. It's just like when you go drinking. Pace yourself a little bit. I mean, you can do fish bowls at Duffy's to start out or end it. But either eat before or take it easy as the lead up happens.
Well, I remember we talked about it during the season, how the Big Ten kind of does a disservice to themselves by not only scheduling those games all in the same season.
I don't want to trade Ohio State for Rutgers to save your ass a loss. I don't want that. I want the opportunity to play a big dog, but just balance it enough where you're not on the road
for all of them.
5 out of 6 death marches here.
And it's not even that they play them all in the same season. It was everyone last year, it was they'd play one or two big games, and then they would play a third one at home or on the road, and it's like you just dumped all your emotions into two games, and now you're expected to go do it a third time, like with no bye week or any time in between.
No, no bye week.
Yeah,
so you're going to get your bye week at some point where...
Before Rutgers.
Yeah, when it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You're going to get your bye week, and I don't know when Nebraska's bye week is, but... Just do some common sense.
Yeah.
Keep it awesome. Keep it where Nebraska is getting the big boys. Nebraska used to be a big boy. That's fine. But the example of 2018 where get the kazoos out, you get Sparty, is it. There needs to be some balance. We'll talk balance. We may talk some baseball, but more football. Mitch Sherman's on the way. Drew Gooden, longtime NBAer, former Jayhawk. Rick Pizzo on the way. Great to have you on a Tuesday with Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Drew Gooden, longtime NBAer and former Jayhawk, going to be with us in 1 hour. We welcome in the pride of Omaha, the biggest Royals fan I know, Mr. Mitch Sherman with ESPN.com and Magazine. Great work in college football and basketball. Mitch, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. I made a trip down to Kansas City on Friday with Junior. He was wearing Yankee gear.
Yeah.
I can't talk him out of it at this point. We might as well let him just suffer, and he'll look back and be remorseful, hopefully. But I don't know, man. Your boys got the win that night. It was good stuff.
Yeah, that was the one for the weekend. So
yes, it was.
And I believe the only one since then. It's only Tuesday, but... Yeah, it's not been a good couple of months, but I may lose faith, but I won't lose my spirit for the Royals. I'll be with them if they go 40 and 120.
There we go. You're standing by them. I like it. Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Mitch, I was getting cranked up about scheduling, in reference to some of Bill Moose's comments and. What's on the horizon, we don't know, but maybe some Big 8 / Big 12 ties beyond the home-and-home coming up with Oklahoma and the home-and-home already on the docket with Colorado. Does that excite you? Take off your ESPN hat and put on a 500-mile radius hat for a second. Does that fire you up to have... other teams than OU or Colorado on the schedule from the now Big 12? Or was there anybody you would draft from the old Big 8 not named Oklahoma or Colorado?
If you can get some of those 500-mile radius caps printed up, I'll put it on.
Colton, get on that.
Yeah, it sounds like a catchy one. I mean, I'm obviously excited about Nebraska, Oklahoma.
Right.
Colorado is interesting because it's the first game that Nebraska will have played against a former conference opponent. I don't know if there's much else about that series that's extremely enticing. You know, if you're if you're traveling and you've not been a fan going back decades and you're going to get a trip to Boulder as part of the home and home, then that's fun because it's a great college town and a great city to visit. So, you know, I'm happy about the Colorado series for that part of it. And anytime you play a Pac-12 team, that's not a bad thing. But No, there's not a whole lot else there in the old Big Eight footprint that gets me super excited other than Oklahoma. I don't think a home and home with Kansas or Iowa State does a lot for Nebraska. Same thing with Kansas State, assuming that it would happen after the end of Bill Snyder's time in Manhattan, which, you know, hey, that may be another 15 years. So you can still get the Cats on the schedule. And if you do it with Bill Snyder, then, hey, I'm all for that. You know, Scott Frost has a history with Kansas State. He got his foot in the door as a coach in Manhattan. So that would be fun if you could get it on the schedule right away. But, you know, in reality, I don't think it would be able to happen while Snyder is still coaching. So I'm not into that too much. Mizzou, you know, had some. Of course, there's a great history there, and that one would be kind of cool because of the SEC element to it. And then, of course, if you can get Texas on the schedule, then absolutely. You know, that's as exciting as anything out there potentially for Nebraska when it comes to non-conference scheduling. I think the revival of Nebraska-Texas would be just outstanding for both programs.
That revival would be outstanding. Bill Moos has got Black Friday rolling again. From 2023 to infinity, it sounds like, with Nebraska-Iowa. You'll have a little Black Friday love between Row the Boat and Nebraska in the meantime. I think that's good. I think that's branding. I think that's a good TV window. So, you know, kind of embracing this Nebraska-Iowa rivalry, it'll continue to grow. And, you know, the Hawkeyes are paying them in at 8-5. As a consistent number, they can go up, they can go down from that, but they've been around there. Mitch, do you think the Big Ten looks at balancing out what they're asking some of their blue bloods to do with crossovers? And I say that, and Nebraska is the example I want to give you. I know they need to kind of pick their game up to be the blue blood again compared to what they've recently done in the Big Ten. All that said, is your road games are just murder this year. Your one crossover, one of your three crossovers is at home, and that's Sparty, but the other two at Ann Arbor, at Ohio State. Not just Nebraska, but are you asking teams to do too much with that potential in a given year of scheduling?
Well, I think you're asking an awful lot of Nebraska next year, but I think you'll find examples out there for other schools, whether it's Purdue or Rutgers or Minnesota, whatever it might be, there are anomalies in the schedule that work out like this for all programs. You know, of course, if you're Ohio State, you're never going to play a road game in Columbus, but nothing the Big Ten schedule makers can do about that. But beyond those kind of things, they're all going to have years like this. I you know, one thing that we've learned, or at least that I've learned from a few years of 14 team conferences, and you see it in the SEC and the ACC as well, is that you're going to have all kinds of quirks in the schedule. It's easier to schedule, and it's easier to have uniformity and you know, a better understanding of trends in scheduling and playing opponents X amount of time in X amount of years when you're working with a 12-game schedule, or in the case of the Big 12, a 10-game schedule. But when you get into that 14 range, or if they ever get higher and start to go into the super conference period, then you're going to go through long stretches where you don't play an opponent that's across your division, and you're going to have years where your schedule just stinks at home. And then there are going to be years like what you have for Nebraska in 2018, where, you, like as you said, Chris, you've got Murderers Row on the road. So I don't know how they do it. You know what I think that would be interesting to find out. How do they do this? What's the process? Do they sit down at a table and strategize? Do they, you know, draw names out of a hat?
Who are they mad at?
Yeah, right. I mean, is it like Jim Delaney's, you know, he's got this secret list of, he carries around this black book all the time, and, you know, that's just strike against Urban Meyer right there. They're going to Wisconsin 3 out of 4 years. I don't know how it
that's
all works.
Funny.
It would be interesting to know how it works, but for you know, when you just look at it in a small sample size like this year, or, you know, any one year, there's always going to be anomalies in a 14-team conference schedule.
He's got a magic eight ball, and he just shakes it, and boom, he's rolling the dice.
That's as good of an answer as anything else, because it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. Nebraska's playing Ohio State how many years in a row, or all but one, and, you know, there are other teams that are in Michigan that just seem to be missing from the schedule, and you begin to wonder if they're even in the same conference. Now, they play Michigan this year, but, of course, there are some droughts as you look at future schedules.
And I get the droughts part, but asking to go to Michigan, to go to Ohio State, while you're going to Northwestern, Iowa, and Wisconsin in your own division, I mean, you could have one more of those crossovers come to Lincoln, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
But with a 9-game schedule, you're just hosed because there's going to be odd years. Maybe you go to 10 games. I don't think they drop back to 8. Mitch, I've got 3 minutes. Bill Moose kind of reiterated that he's sticking by Darren Erstad. I like that. You've covered a lot of college baseball. Have you seen a situation similar to Nebraska? Coach Erstad said they're going to examine their throwing programs. Do you have a theory or a take as to why Nebraska's been so troubled with arm issues, not just pitching, but also position guys?
Boy, you know, I can't think of a specific situation. I'm sure there have been programs out there that have gone through a rash of injuries. If you see it happen, Nebraska's had, I think, a regular amount of injuries until this year, mm-hmm. or maybe the last year and a half. If you see that happen over a 3 or 4 year period, then I think it does become a systemic thing where you have to look, you know, and you should look hard right now mm-hmm. at what's going on with your throwing. But I think the people who are in charge of devising those plans, you know, whether it's strength and conditioning, I know they don't come up with throwing plans, but they work with guys on their elbows and their shoulders, of course, that's taken into account and the stuff they do in the weight room. And your pitching coach, surely, you know, you're not walking into that blind. You know, they understand what these guys, you know, what their arms can hold. They understand the time of year that these guys throw in, you know, what they do in the off season. So I don't think they're going to come out of it and, you know, any kind of examination and say, wow, we were doing this one thing or these two things extremely wrong, and we got to change this or change that. I think they just have to look at every pitcher as a case-by-case basis and realize probably in the end that they ran into a string of real bad luck. I would hope that it's not something they're doing in their regimen. If it is, then, okay, you know, it's good that you looked at it now, but you should have been looking at it a long time ago. So that'll be interesting to hear what the, you know, if they're out front and are open about what the results of that kind of examination are, it would be interesting to hear. My suspicion is that they've just run into a string of bad luck over the last year or so.
Mitch, about 30 seconds. What's coming up from you with ESPN.com, bud?
Well, we're entering postseason college baseball, so I've got work on my plate with the selection show coming up on Monday. Got a story in the works this week about potential party crashers at the CWS this year. Last year we had all chalk. It was eight of the bluest blue bloods in the country, and you know that's not the way it's generally been in Omaha in June. And I think we'll probably see a year this year where at least somebody crashes the party. And you know, I'm writing this week about who that may or may not be.
Mitch, appreciate it, man. We'll get caught up again. Take care, and thanks for your time, sir.
All right, thanks, Chris.
See you. Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. You can read him with ESPN.com. We'll have some thoughts here on what Cleveland did last night, some more college football to get into. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, 20 minutes away. Drew Gooden, longtime NBAer, on the way as well next hour.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Texting and driving. Many, many things you can do are stupid, but this might be the stupidest. Stupider things. That list is very short with texting and driving. And the behavior is always dangerous every time you do it, no matter what. Sending or receiving a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. It's like driving blind at 55 miles per hour, more than the length of a football field. And it increases your crash risk by 23 times. It's also illegal, which means you can be fined between $100 and $300. No text message is more important than your life, the lives of your passengers and others on the roadway. Don't text and drive. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. This just came out. Pro Football Talk has let the world know that owners in the NFL are discussing 15-yard penalties for kneeling during the national anthem. Colton, I just caught an eye roll. Was that at the story or at me?
The story.
I don't like messing with this either. It's not that I'm afraid of controversy. I'm just over it.
Yeah,
I'm over it.
That's it.
Until we get a new wave of, well, you know, it's a 15-yard penalty. Oh, so he's going to start out at the 5-yard line to open the drive. Or you're going to give him the ball at the 40 now. Okay. Owners are continuing to discuss how to handle player protests during the national anthem. Do they allow the team to make its own decision? Do they keep the players in the locker room during the anthem? Do they require players to stand? Do they do nothing? Listen, man, I'm about giving support, praise, and full attention to the flag. It's what I would do. It's what I do. I also get the freedom of speech. And if you're so worried about it, you keep everyone in the locker room.
That's what they used to do.
Period. It's solved.
Right. If they don't want...
And if somebody wants to come out and stand, you don't tell them, no, you can't come out and stand.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's as simple
as it is. It's a wear out.
Yeah. Well, like Danny and I were talking about this last week, how Adam Silver is one of the only commissioners that's kind of just like, do what you want, but like don't cross any lines or whatever it may be.
Don't make it about you.
Right. Make it about what
you're protesting.
Right, exactly. And I'm not saying any players are like trying to make it about themselves, but now the NFL is kind of trying to make it about themselves. And if... They used to keep the players in the locker room anyways. They were never required to go out on the field until the NFL was getting money to have the players go out onto the field for the national anthem. So I don't know. Like you said, it's solved. Keep them in the locker room. And if they're former veterans or if they're family, you know, whatever it may be, let them go out there. But I don't know. I think it's just been... It just drags on, and it's... I don't think a penalty is the way to solve it, though, either.
Okay, go ahead and do it, but it's going to cost you. It's going to cost your team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's punitive.
What if everybody does it? Do they get a 15-yard penalty for everybody that... You know what I mean? Or is it just one?
Let's take this a step further. Instead of a 15-yard penalty, you're docked the touchdown. The other team starts with 7. Yeah? I mean, because that's going to be what's next. Mm-hmm. We're going to go beyond the, well, we don't know what to do with our team, to, let's flag them. Because guys like playing in the no-fun league anyway, where there's not guaranteed contracts, there's debate on, and finally, enforcement of, you know, player benefits and health.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been going on with your brain for 15 years after breaking the old kickoff return wedge. Oh, there's nothing wrong. No, you need to pay. This is dangerous to people's bodies.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But, yeah, the fact that they're thinking about suggesting a penalty, idiotic. Let's make a call. Stay in, go out. But be on the same page.
Yeah.
And you're wasting time with the decision. You know what the bottom line with this is the owners likely are frustrated about the financial issue.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's what it is. Without further ado, let's talk about frustration. Let's pull the Belichick stuff up.
You want to play the whole thing?
Yeah, we'll play the whole bleeping thing. Belichick, Patriots, OTAs. I saw that Denver started their OTAs, And when it comes to who's there and who's not, the 40-year-old quarterback, Tom Brady, is not. Bill Belichick was pressed on it. Bill Belichick was in rare form with how much inflection was in his voice today. I'm kidding, I'm lying. But it was quite funny.
Bill, Tom's not here today. Have you guys spoken at length about...
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the people that aren't here. The guys that are here are improving, they're working hard, and those are the guys we're going to focus on.
Is it challenging to have your starting quarterback to be using your backup and your third-string quarterback?
All the guys that are here, not everybody's working, but all the guys that are out here working are improving, and it's a great opportunity for them and for our team to come together. That's what's happening.
He had mentioned he's going to play next season. He talked about coming to meet with you, and he called it a productive meeting. How much would you share the same view of that time when Rob came in to meet with you?
Yeah, like I said, Mike, I'm focused on the guys that are here, and those are the guys that we're working with in this OTA's process in phase three, and those are the guys I'm concentrating on. That's who we're focused on.
Coach, how important are OTAs in laying the foundation for your year? I mean, how important is it for guys to be here?
Long pause.
Well, we got a long way to go, as I said. We got a long, long way to go. Each day is an opportunity for us, and try to make the most out of every opportunity. So we do all year long.
Stop talking to him. Please. Hey, how important are OTAs? If guys miss them, does that screw the team? Long pause. And what's going through Belichick's mind at that moment right now is how to kill and dispose of the body of whoever asked him the question. Do you think he'll ever just lose it? I was watching A Football Life the other night, and it was on Parcells, and it was really cool. But it had Belichick, and it had Parcells out there. And, you know, Parcells, what am I saying? Jimmy Johnson, slap me. Jimmy Johnson was on his boat on his yacht down in Florida. It's Jimmy Johnson, not Parcells. But it was Jimmy Johnson hanging with Belichick. It was cool. It was great to hear him talk, and Belichick had a shirt on, which was great. But there's like, don't take stupid players. That was like the one thing I got out of it. Can't fix stupid, is what Belichick was saying. But Jimmy was all over it and about making sure guys understood him. That I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to treat all of you differently. There is a hierarchy. If you fall asleep and you're a third-team linebacker, I'm going to fire you. If you're Troy Aikman, I'm going to wake you up. Belichick doesn't seem to get that you got to do different strokes for different folks, even 15 years in with Brady.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Is there a grad transfer in the works for Nebraska football? At center? Well, there's a name out there I'll tell you about coming up. It is Rick Pizzo Big Ten Buffet time shortly. We'll get caught up with former Jayhawk and 14-year NBA vet. Went to the finals with LeBron. LeBron, teammate for 4 years. Drew Gooden coming up. Get his take on last night's performance by the Cavs. What happens tonight with Golden State in Houston? And I want to remind you about your friends at AgriGold. You notice that soybean sign in your neighbor's field this year. It's different. It's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, with high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. The approach to soybeans, no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Okay, we played this game yesterday, and we talked to Jay Moore about it. I want to get Colton Stone's take on it. Most intriguing Husker is who? Hail Varsity says Adrian Martinez. Do you agree? Do you have a different number one?
I think the most interesting positions quarterback, as far as player, I know we've talked about like Breon Dixon It's almost like there's more interesting positions to fill than there is like the player themselves, because if it would have been Jebbia, like, then wouldn't we, like, if he would have came out as a starter, wouldn't he be one of the more intriguing players to, like,
right,
pay
the quarterback position,
right?
But that's the intrigue, though. Does
right.
Frost go with a freshman, true freshman?
Yeah, I think it's got to be between probably Adrian Martinez and then I'd say Breon Dixon, now that you know he's eligible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably between those two.
All right. That sounds good. Did you bring dinner tonight, steamed?
I did not bring dinner tonight.
No chicken, no green beans, no sweet potatoes.
I ate a Cliff Bar.
Did you?
Yeah.
Just one,
yeah. I could probably eat more, but.
Those things are a bit filling.
They can be, but.
When you do your sweet potatoes, you do olive oil and then some red pepper flakes?
I usually do cinnamon.
Okay, so you're a cinnamon olive oil
guy.
All right.
But. They are supposed to be sweet after all, I suppose.
No, that's fine, but you're the sweet and the heat.
Yeah, no, I've done that too, though.
Okay. Tell me about this Heat shirt.
Well, they came out with their City Edition or whatever you want to call it. That's what the NBA called it. But
Third Revenue Stream on the same shirt. But go ahead.
But it's just the South Beach, I guess, color scheme, that Miami Vice like color scheme. So it's like the
baby. Have you
blue
ever
blue.
Watched an episode
no.
of Miami Vice?
No.
No?
No, I haven't. Should I?
Yes.
Okay, I will.
Tell me what you think of Elvis. Okay, Crockett, Tubbs, white Ferrari. He had black, I think, Corvette. Nah, I don't know. He had a convertible before he got the white Ferrari. But Elvis is his pet alligator on his yacht. They went all these years with Sonny Crockett. Not ever being indicted or accused of being a dirty cop who lived on a boat, had a Ferrari, and a pet alligator. Does that not scream drug collusion to you?
It screams 1980s.
Well, it's 80s. But if you're in Miami in the 80s.
Yeah. No, 2 + 2 = 4. So.
Four lines. Okay, Rick Pizzo's on the way. Big Ten Buffet. Drew Gooden, Hall of Famer with Kansas basketball, 14-year NBA vet. That is next hour. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back in at Tower 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for Big Ten Buffet with Rick Pizzo at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, how are you, sir?
Life is good, my friend. I think we should just put this on record, rinse, repeat every week, because I continue to build an arc in my backyard. It is not golf weather. As a matter of fact, it's just pump out the backyard weather. I understand that spring in the Midwest, but I've got to be honest with you, man. I'm pretty sick and tired of it.
You know, we were at baseball last weekend, and it was sweatshirts and stocking hats and zip-ups.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And I don't know what to tell you other than it's going to be a very long and awesome fall. Like no snow, no sleet, no rain, no Big Ten football weather. Maybe we'll have an extended summer. I don't know. That's all I can
hope. All right, good. I'm keeping you to that, Schmitty.
That's right, because, you know, weathermen are 50% passers, if they're lucky. Quick question. We have young ones. Yay or nay on a fifth grade, air quote, graduation gift? I'm against it.
I'm anti. Big time. I mean, listen, we're now giving gifts for basically every single moment that's not even really like a moment that needs to be recognized. It cheapens the moments that do need to be recognized. I'm with you, man. I'm not trying to be hardcore. I'm not trying to be a Scrooge, but save up for the moments that really mean something. It's like when you tip a guy. He was like the concierge of the hotel. He doesn't want you to give him $3 here and $5 there. If he's taking care of you when you leave, you break him off a Benji, and he's much happier than he would have been if you were giving him $5 each time along the way.
Absolutely. You're supposed to graduate fifth grade. That's all I'm saying. Let's talk Big Ten. Bill Moos was on the Husker Network last night and hinted at some scheduling changes in the Big Ten. What's your read on that? What's your theory here with the Big Ten moving forward schedule-wise? Now, Nebraska, Iowa, the Black Friday will be restored after the little dance with Minnesota in 2021. Great, and they're getting Minnesota and Nebraska moved to Black Friday, which is awesome as well for that short time period. But do you see the Big Ten shrinking down to 8 conference games? I don't think they do that, do you?
I would be really surprised. I mean, Jim Delaney made it a point of emphasis to schedule 9 conference games, and there were some coaches who were slightly against it, who believed it would take too much out of their teams by adding another conference game. Jim sold the 9 games, and I think the 9 games have been really successful. Now, you can clearly make the argument that the SEC benefits from not having a 9th conference game, and they basically play a warm-up game the week prior to some of their biggest games. They play 1AA teams. I understand the concept there as well. Here's where I think there needs to be some type of uniformity, and here is my suggestion. My suggestion is any league that only plays 8 conference games must play 2 Power 5 opponents in the non-conference. Any conference that plays 9 conference games must play 1 Power 5 opponent in the non-conference. That means there is uniformity in the sense that there are 10 games against Power 5 opposition. Right now, it is not uniform. So I think if Bill Moose were correct or prescient and could actually see what is written on the wall and that the move is back to 8 games, I don't think it really benefits a Big Ten school if there is uniformity and everybody is playing 10 conference games. I also just don't think it is good for the brand of Big Ten football. You want to play each other. You want to play the toughest opponents. I understand. I read through the tea leaves as well, and it seemed like that's what he was hinting at. I would be remarkably surprised if the Big Ten went back to 8 games that quickly.
You know, I kind of whined about 9 because the SEC and the ACC are playing 8.
Yep.
But I like the 9 because you're getting a Power 5, period. You're not having to play a Sun Belt or, with all due respect, AAC. Those teams have been pretty good, by the way. But you get what I'm saying. I mean, you have built-in strength of schedule within your own league. The thing that's knocked the Big Ten out of more postseason action, playoff games, has been the crossover, and it's been Iowa. Iowa's taken out Michigan. Iowa's taken out Ohio State. Iowa almost got Penn State. Do you think there needs to be a little better balance, or how would you go about, I guess, balancing the crossover within your own division, West or East, schedule? I look at Nebraska as an example, okay, Rick, and you look at the crossovers this year. They are at Michigan. They are at Ohio State. They host Michigan State. This is the year also, though, the even year where they're on the road at Northwestern, at Wisconsin,
yep,
and Iowa. I think you could break some of that up, keep it all on the schedule, but make it a little more balanced.
Right. The trouble is, you know, the conference schedules are done several years out. So can you really predict how good teams are going to be? Sure, you can say, I think, safely that Ohio State is going to be a really good football team every year for the next decade plus. You could probably say that about Wisconsin. You at least know what you're going to get. I think you could say that about some teams, but there are years when you have a school on your schedule as a crossover and they are much better than expected, Northwestern last year, or they are not nearly as good as expected, Michigan State 2 years ago. So it's a really hard dance to figure out these schedules. And at the same time, you have to remember, Chris, there are schools that absolutely positively want to have protected rivalries. Now, fortunately, most of those protected rivalries are within your division, so you're going to play those schools every year. But it is a nightmare. Trust me, I have seen how these schedules get put together and how they try to work the dates to make it as equitable as possible. But as soon as they left Legends and Leaders and went to East and West, there was going to be more of an issue of schools having really hard schedules 1 year and then what would be considered a significantly easier schedule the next year. For all the complaining about Legends and Leaders, it was a more even divide in terms of the teams that you are going to play every year in your division and crossover. This is going to be more inequitable year by year, but I do think that any team that struggles 1 year, any team that is a disadvantage 1 year is probably going to be at the advantage in the next year or two.
Right. It's going to come back around where a year from now, Nebraska, at least within their own division, right, they're going to have the big three in the West, Northwestern, Iowa, Wisconsin, with all due respect to Purdue and their kind of trend right now, you get them at home. That's what I'm wondering if things can get looked at where, fine, you're going to play Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State in the crossover, but that same year, maybe you'll get Wisconsin at home instead of having to go to Camp Randall. You're still going to play them. It just might be an easier venue. We'll see what happens schedule-wise, but it's exciting, especially the years you get just a loaded home schedule. And it's been a while, but 2012 to me was just an incredible year for Nebraska. They won the West that year, but their home schedule was dynamite.
Really matters to fans, right? I mean, you want to have a home schedule that really lights you on fire. I mean, so many of Nebraska's really interesting, intriguing games this year are on the road. Mm-hmm. And there are years like that that happen to every team, but it absolutely does stink when it happens to your team.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Buffet at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, we're putting together the Hail Varsity yearbook. That'll go out in June. We'll get you a copy. It's going to be tremendous. We're putting together some of our preseason thoughts on the league. Let's spend a second or two on Wisconsin. I know Horny Brook's record's 20-3. I know the offensive and defensive line that comes back for Wisconsin, and I know the backfield is tremendous. Where are you at right now with Wisconsin and the quarterback they have? Can he get it done for them? Could this be the first year in a long time where the West is a champion in the Big Ten?
Boy, I don't see why not. I know that there are people who believe that Wisconsin has won in spite of Alex Hornibrook. I disagree with that. He does what they ask him to do. Now, he has made some really bad throws in his career. He may not have the strongest arm in the world, but when you look at what surrounds him, what comes back next year, specifically at the wide receiver position, Quintez Cephas, if he comes back fully healthy from injury, was a guy who we saw really becoming a solid player. I think Danny Davis last year put together one of the quietest seasons maybe in the entire country for a first-year guy, and he's a guy who I think is going to get better each and every year in that offense. And you can always rely on the offensive line and Taylor behind you. So I don't think that Alex Hornibrook is a guy who has underachieved. I just think he's a guy that, based on his surrounding parts, understands he doesn't have to be the star, and if he is called upon to be the star, then Wisconsin's probably doing something wrong with the way that they are doing things philosophically. So I think he can get them there. I mean, once again, I would say, boy, can you come back after all these losses on defense, especially in the defensive backfield this year? But I've said that every year for the last 5 years, whether it be at the defensive line or the linebacker position. And each and every year, that defense continues to find guys, plug and play, different defensive coordinators, different stars. And they're still, every year, among the best in the nation. So why should 2018 be any different? You rely on that defense and what surrounds you. Alex Hornibrook does not have to be a star for them to win the Big Ten.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Rick, when you look at Haskins in Ohio State, let's stay there because they are the reigning Big Ten champs. Defensively, I know they've had losses as well, but their defensive line with Bosa and companies, tremendous. What's the thing that Ohio State does best with their quarterback grooming? I know they get good talent in, but once they get to Columbus, it seems like they get multi-year starters out of every high-profile kid they bring in.
Well, I think it does. It doesn't end with the recruits that you get, but we are talking about, when you talk about the Ohio State quarterbacks that they've brought in, certainly since Urban Meyer has been there, you're not just talking about good quarterbacks, you're talking about some of the highest rated prep players in the country, regardless of position. I mean, game changers. I mean, Haskins comes in last year, and in the Michigan game, in a game where he should be completely overwhelmed and nervous, he comes in and he looked every bit as, if not more comfortable than JT Barrett did in that game before he got injured. So you are not just recruiting a certain kind of player, you're recruiting a certain kind of person as well, because most of these guys have been dealing with the attention and the pressure since they were in high school, sophomores, juniors, they've been the best player all along, so they know what it's like to be in that situation. And that is a huge difference. That is in front of 100,000 people at Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan. If you can walk in and feel comfortable taking a snap in that right away and simply let your athletic ability take over, then you're a step ahead of every other young guy on the field. And that's exactly what Haskins has done. That's exactly what every top tier young recruit at Ohio State has done, because they're recruiting a certain kind of young man in addition to what they can do on the football field.
You know, the kid can make the throws and he's got legs to move on the zone own read, but you're so right, Rick. It's what type of mentality are you bringing in, and when the lights are on, can you execute? That's the secret, isn't it? You can find strong arms, fast legs, but can you get somebody that's calm between the ears?
No doubt about it. I mean, you just look a couple years back at, you know, Penn State when they went to Ohio State three plus years ago, mm-hmm. and it was the Christian Hackenberg experiment, and he just melted down, mm-hmm. just completely melted down inside Ohio Stadium. And here's a guy who had all the talent in the world and obviously didn't do at Penn State what a lot of people expected him to do. But it is just a reminder of how hard it is to go into some of these environments and be able to actually utilize your skills, because your mind has to be right first. And the best players in college football are the guys whose minds and bodies are working together. You could have all the talent in the world, man, but if you are ready to turtle up and get nervous when they start coming at you in front of 100,000 people and you're facing first-round defensive linemen, then it doesn't matter how strong your arm is. It doesn't matter how fast your legs are. That's what I love about Haskins. In the moment, right away, he's not going to be intimidated by anything.
We're going to go NHL as we get you out of here. Washington and Tampa, series tied at 3, game 7 tonight. The Golden Knights are waiting. First comment on this Vegas story as they're waiting in the Stanley Cup Finals, and then what happens in Game 7 tonight?
Yeah, listen, the Vegas story is fantastic. I just want people to also remember that they're not your regular expansion team. They got to choose players that other expansion teams have never been able to choose before. Teams had to leave unprotected veterans, which has never happened before in the world of expansion. So it is not like Vegas doesn't have talent on that team. I mean, they have some guys that can really play. That being said, they were, 500-1 in the preseason, so it is the longest of long shots, and it would be one of the best stories in hockey history. But man, what a game 7 setup today between Tampa and Washington. I give the Caps a ton of credit. You know, Tampa comes roaring back to take the lead and is on the verge of getting to the finals, and Washington finds a way. There is nothing better in my mind, nothing better than game 7 in NHL playoff hockey. Better than game 7 of the World Series, better than the last 2 minutes of the Super Bowl. The third period in a tight game like that is as good as it gets in any venue, in any sport, anywhere.
Just to be clear, you did correctly call and put some cheese down on that 500-1 long shot.
I can neither confirm nor deny those rumors based on my affiliation with a college conference, sir. I apologize.
I love that. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, at BT and Rick Pizzo. Rick, take care. We'll get caught up again. Thanks for the time, man.
Schmidt, it's always my pleasure, buddy. Have a great week.
Rick Pizzo, Hail Varsity Radio. Good to talk to Mr. Pizzo. Drew Gooden is coming up. Longtime NBAer. 4 years in Cleveland, including a finals trip with LeBron. You know him for going double-double on the Big Red at the Devaney Center when he was with Kansas and Coach Roy. So Drew Gooden is next. His take on the conference finals, his thoughts on Nebraska. Hail Varsity continues.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We welcome in former Jayhawk and longtime NBAer, now doing work with the NBA, Drew Gooden with us. Drew, thanks for taking a few minutes, man. How are you?
Doing unbelievable. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you. Takeaways from last night. Cleveland gets things tied up at 2 apiece. I saw this line today. LeBron has made the impossible look normalized. I kind of shook my head, but he's kind of done it. Another great performance for him. Did you think Cleveland was going to be able to tie things up moving forward?
You know what? I think you brought the man's name up, LeBron James. I think now we can't kind of underestimate his powers. he's been having a campaign that said witness for the last 15 years. So I think there's probably about 90% out there that's had witnesses, and another 10% still don't believe him. But I think he's done a phenomenal job, especially the way he's been able to fight back. And not just this series, but all of them. And position himself right now and his team to have a chance to go into Boston and take a lead.
Drew Gooden's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, longtime NBA or former Jayhawk. What did you witness in Cleveland as a teammate with LeBron? You were there 4 years in C-Town.
I just seen the growth. We knew he was good, but we didn't know how good he was actually going to be. And looking back at it, you know, just the consistency of being out on the floor and giving yourself a chance to be healthy, I mean, that's a fate in itself. And for LeBron to, you know, every season be healthy and be playing during the playoffs, I don't think he ever missed a playoff game due to injury. So it's kind of like he's going from being an all-star to a Hall of Famer to a great player to now being almost a superhero, because he's always out there available to play. And I think that's something that a lot of people take for granted, that his health is one of the reasons why he's able to still play at this high level.
What do you know about his off-season program from a conditioning standpoint? What have you heard?
Well, I mean, it went from anywhere from the beginning when I first played with him, where he really didn't lift weights or stretched or really cared about his body that much. And I think over time, and now what I hear that he's doing is kind of like unreal. And I think he spends a lot of money, and he kind of budgets throughout the season of his own training staff, you might say, whether it's a chef on the nutrition side, whether it's a physical trainer, a PT, or is even a personal trainer. So, I mean, he put collectively a team together that's kind of helping him produce the way he's doing right now, as we see.
Drew Gooden's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, talking NBA playoffs, his time with LeBron. How does Boston react now? The pressure's back on them. What's that moment, what's that opportunity like when you go up, now you're tied, and then things go back home and you got to take the series back?
It's almost like a boxing match, you know. You know, the first two rounds, you feeling yourself, you're going in there, you're feeling good, you won the first two rounds of a boxing match, and then you kind of go back in there and you lose the next two rounds. So I'm thinking it's more of a humbling experience right now for the Boston Celtics. They came out like gangbusters, but they're going back basically 0-0, and the series starts all over. So I think those last two games for Boston has been a humbling experience for them, especially for a young team. And I think this will be experience versus the deer in headlights, you might say, analogy. And the deer in headlights will be the Boston Celtics.
Drew, let's talk Western Conference Finals. You have Golden State, you have Houston. And it was not a pleasant ball game for for Houston as they went west. What happens tonight? How does Coach D'Antoni and Harden, how do they respond? And what do you foresee from Golden State?
I believe that they won't let down. I think they let their guard down after game one, after that blowout. And kind of game two had Houston on the ropes, and you know, they fought back like their life was on the line, which they were supposed to, and kind of tied the series up going back to Golden State. Now, with that being said, Golden State kind of reminded themselves, hey, we can't come in lackadaisical. This team is for real. And to beat them by 41 points in game four or game three?
It's going four.
Yeah, game four, to beat them by 41 points. It's kind of like we were right the first time. And Houston going back home, I think the pressure is really on them, not from a standpoint of where they have to win one at home, but the fact they just lost by 41 points. I mean, that's almost three ball games of losses in one game. And when I heard D'Antoni say, hey, that was our C game, I think it was more like an F game, because if you lose by 41 points, you call that a C game. I wonder what your DNF game looks like.
Yeah, right on, right on. Yeah. Is there anybody that can get up and do a better job on Durant? When Golden State's been off, he's been consistent at least, and then you had Steph go off like he did in game three. Who's the best guy suited to at least try and contain Durant, if there is such thing?
I don't think it is such thing. I think LeBron said it best last year playing against Kevin Durant, and I think in two different post-game interviews, LeBron was asked, you know, what was the difference out there with this Golden State Warriors team? And he just said straight up, Kevin Durant. You can't – it was already hard enough to stop the Warriors without him.
Mm-hmm.
It was already a hard enough game plan to prepare for with just Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green. Now, when you add Kevin Durant to the mix, he's like that trump card that you still have to focus on Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. Oh, and you know what else? You got one more guy, Kevin Durant. So it's kind of like pick your poison. And when Steph Curry has a game like he had last game, KD turns into maybe you should say an X factor. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have an X factor, usually an X factor in a series or a ball game comes off the bench or is a mediocre role player that will give you a spark for about 15 points. Now, when you say your X factor is capable of scoring 40 points, that's a whole different anomaly of calling somebody a X factor. You know what I mean? So I think he's more of the benefactor.
Absolutely. Got more minutes. Drew Gooden with us, Hale Varsity Radio, longtime NBA performer, of course, All-American with Kansas. And, Drew, you've had such a great career, and you're doing work in the NBA now, doing some broadcasting. What was your favorite stop? Did you have a favorite place, a place that you'll call home in the NBA?
You know what? I had a lot of great stops throughout my career, Cleveland being one of them. But where I finished in Washington, mm-hmm. and just to tell in the story of my career, you know, I couldn't have painted a better picture than how I finished in the city that I finished off playing with the Washington Wizards in that organization. I mean, with Ernie Grunfeld, Tommy Shepard, from the players and John Wall, Bradley Beal, being able to watch their development, and then just being a part of an organization that's ran by Ted Leontis and the Leontis family. I couldn't ask for any other way to go out and with no other organization, because I felt like that was home. I was able to finish my career there, and I'm still engaged with the team. And I will call that my home. So if that can answer your question, mm-hmm. it'll be the Washington Wizards and staying in the DMV area, Maryland area.
That's outstanding. What was Popovich like to play for?
Popovich was almost similar to like a Roy Williams or Larry Brown, you know, mm-hmm. George Karl. Very attention to detail, great personalities. You know, if you always say a father figure. Like if I was sending my son off to college or away for a long time and I had somebody to lead him and kind of take the reins from me as a father, these would be the coaches that I'm talking about, the Popoviches, the Roy Williams, you know, the Dean Smiths. And Pop, what I noticed is right when I got to the Spurs, that I kind of felt, you know, I kind of felt those similarities of going to Kansas and being in the system and kind of attention to detail. And it was almost a mirror image when I went to the Spurs and played for those 4 months there. And it was a good eye-opening experience because it kind of showed me that college basketball and the format of just, you know, organizing everything from the staff, from shoot-arounds to practices to travel. It was almost a college atmosphere, but you're playing with Hall of Fame players and Tim Duncan, Mono Ginobili, Tony Parker, and then a Hall of Fame coach as Greg Popovich. So it was an eye-opening experience that a college atmosphere or a college-type organization can actually suffice in an NBA setting. And I think Greg Popovich has proved everybody wrong that his system is the best, and I think that's what everybody is starting to do now in the NBA.
What do you remember about your trips to Lincoln when you played for KU?
Oh, the Cornhusker Hotel, pregame, pregame meal. That filet mignon was one of the best filet mignon at the time. But is that still around, the Cornhusker Hotel?
It is, Cornhusker Marriott. We do our football Fridays from there. So yeah.
Okay. So I'm glad it's still around. But those used to be some of the best pregame meals by far in the Big 12 when I was coming up. I used to always get the filet, corn, and mashed potatoes, baby.
Hey, it's Drew Gooden. Give me the filet. Yes, Mr. Gooden. It's you're medium rare, I hope.
Back then I was well done. Now I'm on the lighter side. Now I'm more of a medium guy now.
All right, you did a well-done filet. I'll trust you on that one. Drew Gooden with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Drew, thanks so much for your insight. Thanks for your time. We'll get caught up again down the road. Best to you and your career with the NBA, and thanks for your time, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Drew Gooden, great to be caught up with him. Teammate of LeBron, some great insight on his growth in the filet mignon at the Cornhusker pre-Nebraska, Kansas. That's funny. That's awesome. The fact he got a filet done, well done. I'm shaking my head at that, but whatever. So, Otter Heyman, I tell you what, they'll take care of you. You'll be well done in a good way with Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauterhaven. Three locations for you, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion Lincoln around Weston, Grand Island, and pure-grown diamonds are real diamonds that are grown in a lab. They are 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. Birthday anniversary coming up. Maybe it's time to say, will you marry me? They're eco-friendly, they're sustainable, they're beautiful, they're some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauterhaven history. Go see Rick and your friends today at Sauterhaven, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauterhaven. Sauterhaven.com. Some NBA thoughts, some more college football next on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Good to have you back. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Thanks to Drew Gooden, Rick Pizzo this hour. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house. Let's do that, 466-377-6800, 825-5865. So Scott Frost has been asked several times in several interviews about the grad transfer topic, and on one hand, you've got Burrow going to LSU. You have reports of folks who've talked to Burrow's family that say he would have loved to come to Lincoln. On a greater scale, you don't mess with what you got at quarterback and that quarterback room. We've been over that, and you're not going to change my mind on that. But what you are open to is, yes, the ability to add at other spots to help the team. What's Nebraska need right now? Well, the quarterback room, you're waiting to see it shake itself out. You feel good about Adrian or Tristan. What do you know you have at center? You don't. Do you move one of your best linemen from guard to center? Do you trust a redshirt freshman and Hunter Miller to take over at center? Do you go with Raerdon or Bo Wilson? And I know they're not centers per se. We talked to Coach McBride about this. There may be an answer, and I don't know how likely it is, other than this guy wants out of Alabama. Alabama's produced two of the last three Remington Award winners. Ohio State's been pretty good on the list as well. You have Brandon Kennedy is going to leave Alabama. His choices of where to leave Alabama for are getting roadblocked. This from AL.com. So Bama denied offensive lineman Brandon Kennedy's initial appeal. He wanted the transfer to another SEC school Monday. Yesterday, the Bama Crimson Tide gave offensive lineman Brandon Kennedy the old Heisman. Get away. You're not playing here, and you're not playing at Alabama. You're not playing at Auburn. You're not going to Tennessee as a graduate transfer. We are blocking you from having contact with these two schools as well as any other SEC school and any future Alabama opponents. So Kennedy graduated in December. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's going to go to the appeals board. Problem is, it's Alabama's appeal board, in my opinion. So you've had Jeremy Pruitt chime in here from Tennessee, who used to be on Alabama's staff. You know, the big thing here, quote, when it comes to these guys that are grad transfers, is if they've shown the maturity to do what they need to do to get their degree. Well, Kennedy's done that. Mm. Obviously, I don't think they would be leaving a situation where they felt like they could continue to have success. And they've earned their degree, in my opinion. They've earned the right to choose where they want to go by their maturity and the things they've already accomplished. I agree. If you're a graduate transfer and you graduate college in 3 years, 3.5 years, mm-hmm. you should not be blocked. It should be unblockable, the anti-Mutombo, okay? Or the anti-Corver, forgive me. But man, I get it, especially with the relationship. I mean, Pruitt's been a monster recruiter for Alabama. Mm-hmm. They all are. It's the only way you can get away from Saban. Get out on the road and recruit. So Kennedy was Alabama's backup center. As a redshirt sophomore last year, he suffered a season-ending injury. And he was going to start out the fall camp second team. And so you have Kennedy. He's received a medical redshirt after last season. He's set to be able to gain a redshirt sophomore ability and still have three years to play. Oh, 3 years to play.
That's big.
There's an SEC rule here. Nick Saban doesn't like being caught in the cases. He's supportive of guys. But I don't think this whole transfer thing is something we want to look at more than 1,000 feet. So if you're Nebraska and you've got a guy who has 3 years and Alabama is saying no to Tennessee or Auburn or any other SEC school, this kid's super smart. He's gotten out in 3 years. Mm-hmm. Or his redshirt sophomore.
Whatever it is,
right.
Yeah.
So I would figure out a way to get him to Lincoln as an option at center. And even if it doesn't work out this year, he doesn't start out at it, I look at it. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, you got Farmer and you got Gerald. Okay. I mean, those are your guards, Foster and Farmer. Mm-hmm. And I think Wilson is going to be good. I think Raritan can be good. I think they're going to be fine with Coach Austin. But Bama hasn't whiffed or missed. All right. They have not whiffed or missed on their offensive line very often. Mm-hmm. And they've been incredible with it. The thing that this guy's miffed about, I think, is his injury situation starting out at second team, and he's done everything he can to come back from an injury. Lord knows what that rehab process is like for those big dudes. Mm-hmm. And you've had a guy retire recently who did rehab and come back, but just wants to move on from football. You got a guy who really still wants to play ball, and he's Alabama quality.
I just think if you're so thin at a position and a guy has 3 years, even if it's 2 years, whatever it may be, and he has the experience of playing for Alabama, if you aren't sure you have a piece to fill in your puzzle, there's nothing to lose.
No.
Everything to gain if it works out.
Absolutely. And if he's I don't know if you can be a double grad transfer.
I don't know how that works. I'm so confused by why
Because wasn't your impression the same as mine, where if you're a grad transfer, you can go anywhere and anywhere and any way you want?
Well, and think about it. If you're a graduate, like say you want to go to law school or whatever, whatever grad school it may be, like wouldn't you want your choice of where you want to do that grad study at? Well, I don't get why they can block that.
Well, they can't block him from going to Tennessee or Auburn to go be a graduate student, but they can block him from playing football.
Right.
And I think most of the Big Ten was also probably blocked by Urban Meyer for Joe Burrow. I mean, he wasn't going to end up at Penn State or Minnesota.
Yeah.
Don't send him to the enemy. So I get Saban's point, but this Saban-Pruitt dynamic, because Pruitt, Tennessee's got some talent there. They're just probably missing a couple pieces. Kirby Smart, I mean, hell, he tried to hijack the strength and conditioning coach, and that's what Alabama's been built on. We'll wind down a Tuesday. Great to be with you at Hale Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HaleVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
One final time, big thanks to Drew Gooden, 14-year NBA vet, Hall of Famer with Kansas basketball, played with LeBron in the 08 finals. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. We talked a lot of scheduling today. Mitch Sherman was tremendous. Tomorrow on the show, the Pirate Mike Leach will join us. We are efforting a confirmation time from former Colombo crime boss Michael Franzese. A week late, but better late than never on sports gambling. We'll talk to a guy who was in on some coercement and fixes in his time, we hope. We'll be in with Michael Franzese tomorrow. And then Shuey, Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. I hope Shuey's in. I'm planning on him. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. Let's do that, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Who you got tonight, Colton? Warriors or Rockets?
Well, kind of as Gooden said, it's like losing a bunch of games in one game when you lose by 41. But after just an absolute
beating,
dismantling, yeah, I had a tough time thinking the Rockets were able to get one in Oakland, and especially if they would have gone down 0-2, it probably would have been a sweep. But I think the Warriors will end it in five. I think they'll win by about 6 or 7 tonight.
Line is 8 for the Danny Burke fan club out there. -8 for Golden State. I don't know the over-under on it. I think Golden State wins by about 10. I think Houston probably keeps it close for a bit. And then Golden State explodes. We do this after Celtic losses. It's evil Brad Stevens. And it's where we act like we're 12 again and we hear a dirty word. We insert imaginary dirty words into responses from Brad Stevens. Here's evil Brad Stevens, part one.
You know, we have to have five guys playing all out and really honed in defensively.
Okay. More evil Brad Stevens. This was pretty good, actually. This one was super funny.
Very end of the third quarter was not good. End of the first, end of the third, or two that really stand out as not good. You know, the rest of the game, obviously, I thought we had some shots we'd like to have back. I mean, I thought we had a couple possessions where we had multiple driving kicks. The defense was broken down, and we just didn't convert. The end of the first, end of the third was those were tough on us.
The most mild-mannered dude you'd see coming out of church. Maybe I overdid it with the bleeps, but that's funny. And it's 2-year-old. I'm sorry, but.
Like I said,
he's just standing there staring and blinking at you, talking normally, and you insert a little ha 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 moment. Why not?
Because we've never heard him say it.
No, well, he's probably said it, but see, it's in that tone. He's got that little Indiana twang, right? I thought we got beep
F-bombs. Just,
right. Just straight let your mind wander. Let your mind wander.
No inflection in the voice.
No. And that we got. We'll see. We'll be back tomorrow. Michael Franzis, Mike Leach, Mike Shewhart. Thanks so much to Colton Stone, Mitch Sherman, Drew Gooden, Rick Pizzo, Chris Schmidt. Back to you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.